Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
I'm going to read to you a little bit from a little book called the Mystica Theologia. Thou Trinity beyond being, direct us to the height of mystical revelation, sublime beyond all thought and light, wherein the simple, absolute, and immutable mysteries of divine truth are hidden in the translucent darkness of that silence which revealeth in secret. For this darkness, though of deepest obscurity, is yet radiantly clear, and though beyond touch and sight, it overfills our unseeing minds with splendors of transcendent beauty. This is my prayer. As for you, beloved Timothy, exerting yourself sincerely in mystical contemplation, quiet the senses, the workings of the intellect, and all that may be sensed and known, and all that is not and is. For by this you may unknowingly attain, in as far as it is possible, to the oneness of Him who is beyond all being and knowledge. Thus, through indomitable, absolute, and pure detachment of yourself from all things, you will be lifted up to that radiance of the divine darkness which is beyond being, surpassing all and free from all. Now, we all know, I think, or we should know, that when we're born into a state of schizophrenia to some degree. We leave the simplicity, the unity that we have with the mother in the mother's womb, and come into this world, and with two eyes and two ears, we interpret this world around us. And in interpreting this world around us, we don't think of it as an interpretation. We take it to be, this is the way it is, and we take the whole thing as, oh, look at all the objects. Look at all the objects. And so the world becomes other than I. It becomes something, well, we have different attitudes toward different things, you know. Sometimes we have an attitude that the things in this world, or the world itself, you know, is something to be subdued, something that we have to conquer. Once in a while, we have an attitude that maybe we should understand it, once in a while. But that it is a something. To be one with. How often does one think that this world is something to be one with, to have a samyana with it, you know, to be united with it, you know? But because of our way of looking at things, which is a divided, dualistic, dichotomous viewpoint, we have now the world of matter, the objects and things, and we have a world of spirit. However you may picture that, maybe you think of ghosts or, you know, whatever, you know. But we think of two worlds, one here and one someplace else. See, one below, we are here below, and the other is up in heaven. And yet, if we stop and think about it, this world is one truth. It is a uni. We have even named it universe. One world, one universe, one. But this one universe has these two aspects, but we don't think of them as aspects. We divide them. The two aspects, one is the seen with the senses, and the other, we say, is the not seen, because we can't see it with the senses. But the invisible is the root of the visible. I think it was Rilke who said something to that effect. Invisible appearing to the senses becomes an object because of our mechanism. And we call it matter. The invisible we can't perceive with the senses, so we say, well, that's the world of the spirit. And Kant, as you know, called them the phenomena and the noumenon world. But we divide. We've got the body and the soul. We have a separation between lower and higher. We have a separation between sin and virtue, and a separation between sinner and saint. In this dichotomous state, man stands today so fragmented, so divided, that sometimes it's almost a miracle how we manage to keep ourselves together. You know? Our energy is exhausted in keeping ourselves together. You relax and you fall apart. So one of our great, and maybe the greatest need of today, is to get beyond these divisions, to transcend them, see, to reach that one, that state of one, which is neither this nor that, which is neither east or west, which is neither man nor woman. And when you call it God, or truth, or Moksha, or Nirvana, or the Absolute, or the Dharma, or the Logos, or Tao, these many mystical names of one reality. Reality. We must come to a synthesis, which is a transcendence of duality, to transcend the dual state. And in this non-dualistic state, man is free. In a non-dualistic state, man becomes finally an individual. He becomes clear. He can begin to see through superstitions, no matter how old, how ancient. He can begin to see the stupidity in which humanity has lived, and not only lived, but glorified. You know, there are over 300 religions in the world, and there are many subsects to these religions, which man holds to. How many are real traditions, you know, for real, actually going to the point, instead of just going around and around and around? How many are built on superstition? All because of dualism. To no longer divide spirit and matter. After all, matter is light. It's crystallized light. You know, it is a spirit manifest. And so spirit is matter. You know, and when we do last week, you know, from the this very body, put it. To realize that. And the body unmanifest, unseen. Also, so we have this form and formless. God and the world are not two things. Spirit and matter are not two things. India, for long years, proclaimed that she was the source of spirituality in the world. Well, from what I have heard, I have formed an opinion. I have heard that if you wander out in the back country in India and ask some of these so-called self-styled gurus, you know, what about this man? What about that man? What about that woman? You know, that they know very little, if anything, about spiritual masters of other times and other countries. You know, they haven't heard of Lao Tzu or Chuang Tzu, nor have they heard about Rinzai or Dogen or Basho. They haven't heard of Pythagoras, Heraclitus, or Dionysius. Dionysius. He's mentioned in the New Testament, you know, in Acts. Luke writing about the holy acts of God. This is the little thing, you know. And he tells in it of Saint Paul speaking to the men of Athens. And he says, I perceive, this is Saint Paul, you know, I perceive that in all things ye are very religious. For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription. On the altar was written, to an unknown God. So he commences then, St. Paul does, to try to convert them to his version of God. That God is not to be worshipped with men's hands, you know, the idols that they make and what they do with them, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth all life and breath and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, that they should seek the Lord. For in him we live and move and have our being, for we are also his offspring. And then he talks to these men in Athens about the resurrection. And now some of these men began to mock him. They made fun of him. And again, others said, well, we will hear thee again on this matter. And, you know, they excuse themselves this way. Someday, well, I will think about it. And so St. Paul departed from them. And it says in these Acts, nevertheless, certain men joined him and believed, among whom were Dionysius and a woman named Damaris. Now, this Dionysius, in time, became the first Christian bishop in Athens, and tradition has made of him a martyr. They killed him. During the Middle Ages, he was revered as the author of certain writings. I think he wrote 5 or 6 little treatises. Well, did he write them or did he not write them? He lived in the first century, you know, and the writings became extant in the 6th century. Maybe they were lost and rediscovered. Who knows? You know? It's also thought that they may have been written by, they were written in Greek, but they were written by some man in Palestine late in the 5th century. So they came to being. And because of this confusion as to who actually wrote these little treaties, it is customary to refer to the author of this Mystica Theologia as a pseudo-Dionysius. Now, the mystics, mystic meaning something hidden, a secret mystery. The mystics are those that are hunting, searching for this hidden secret. Now, the mystics of Christianity are few. There was this Dionysius, there's Meister Eckhart, there's St. Francis, there's St. John of the Cross, and I would say the beloved St. John, and there's Jacob Verma. Sister Teresa. Yeah. Not nearly as many as should have been, you know. But mysticism in the 3rd century after the Nicene Council became verboten in the church because it was at this Council of Nicaea that they decided between should we follow the mystical route or should we follow a dogma? And they decided they would follow the dogma. And the secret mystery, the search for the mystical became a no, and underground they went. It's kind of like living in Russia today, you know. You can't be a mystic there, outwardly. In fact, it's very difficult to even appear religious. You have to hide it. So meeting with others of a like mind in the darkness of the night and never knowing when that knock of the door is, you know, coming from the KGB. It's really an ugly world that man has created where one cannot meditate openly, you know, where you can't talk openly about truth and about love. It's difficult even in this country, you know, to openly sit for meditation, you know, and then appear as if you're committing some crime certainly doesn't indicate that humanity has progressed very far. I can remember not too long ago that somebody asked me what I did, and I said, well, I teach meditation. Oh, what's that? You see, even the word is not familiar. But this mystical religion, maybe it takes a certain type of a mind or a certain attitude to understand. Because the understanding is through something other than senses. So it's mystical. And for those who won't understand, it's something to be wiped out. And yet, for those who do search, they have found that the mystical search enhances and enriches and makes our life more festive. It gives a different kind of a meaning to the life that we live. And it creates tremendous possibilities for rejoicing. Yeah? And Jesus did say, rejoice, rejoice, I say unto you, rejoice. You know, an insight into yourself, you know, it's kind of like you hear music. And it appeals to you, huh? You can't describe it. You can't describe music. Can you describe music? You can say it was beautiful, And you can talk about the notes, or the violin, or the piano, or the flute. You know. But when you say it was beautiful, that's your judgment. That's your evaluation. That's your world. Just saying it is beautiful doesn't describe music. Not music. It describes your mood. It describes your attitude. It may describe what happens to you through the music. And so with this religious experience, it can be felt, it can be experienced, it can be remembered. But words about it, to tell exactly what it is, one is left almost dumb, without any words. And so, you know, we come to this Zen thing of, this. Now, this not being able to talk about it in words, Dionysius has a term for it. He calls it agnosia. Agnosia. From whence cometh the word agnostic. The word agnostic, I understand, was coined by Huxley. And Bertrand Russell described himself as an agnostic. Now, an atheist says that there is no God. And he says it as if he knows there's no God. It's a statement. As if he has explored the whole reality and has come to know there is no God. So that in declaring there is no God, he is declaring his knowledge. That's his state of knowledge. Gnosis. He knows. Gnosis means knowledge. Right? A theist says there is God as if he knows. As if he has attained. He is also gnosis, He has this, what he thinks is knowledge thereof. He thinks there is God. He has searched everywhere, and yes, he's come up, there is God. An agnostic, now, means one who says, I don't know. He doesn't take either side. Not is or is not. I don't know. I don't know of my own experience whether God is or God is not. I am ignorant in this. So Bertrand Russell said, I am agnostic. And now, this term Dionysius has, agnosia, you know, there's a depth in it when he uses it. It's pregnant with meaning. It's almost like there's a promise that's going to be fulfilled. There is a waiting in it. It's like something's whispering. Somebody's coughing. When Bertrand Russell says, I'm an agnostic, he is saying it as if it is a logical statement. Well, he's like a mathematician, I wonder, has he ever tried meditation? Has he ever really gone deep within himself? Has he ever tried to go beyond this agnostic state? Or is this state of being an agnostic the ultimate? And there's nothing more I can do about it. I just don't know. Now this Dionysius, he says that one can only know God when one comes to a moment where one knows nothing. And he says that's agnosia. The not knowing is the opening of the door. You know, we find something very similar in the Song of Enlightenment. You cannot grasp it. You cannot get rid of it. In not being able to get it, you get it. When you are silent, it speaks. And when you speak, it is silent. Yeah. And Socrates said, I only know one thing. I know nothing. And we call him a wise man. Agnosia is a state of the not knowing. And meditation creates that state. You know, when meditation has helped you to burn out everything that's not necessary, has helped you to unburden yourself of your conditioning, then, for a moment, you know, you are utterly silent, still. You know, out of which you come so that you're like a child, not knowing anything, and yet full of reverence, and full of awe, and full of wonder. And then to go back into the silence and have it reveal some things. You know, we come to a place finally that the East calls samadhi, which is a term greatly misunderstood. But the word samadhi itself means all is solved. No more questions, no more answers, no more doubts. All is solved. See, it's the end of the line. No belief, no not belief. The door to that is this silence. This not knowing, and Dionysius calls it agnosia. And it is through this not knowing that one comes to know the noetic quality, noesis. In the Kapikina Upanishads, you know, it says, if you think that you know well the truth of Brahman, know that you know little. What is indeed the truth of Brahman, you must therefore learn. I cannot say that I know Brahman fully, nor can I say that I know him not. He among us who knows him best, who understands the spirit of the words, nor do I know that I know him not. And Lao Tzu says, one who knows does not talk. One who talks does not know. Therefore, the sage keeps his mouth shut and his sense gates closed. And this is called profound identification. This tremendous paradox of this mysticism, the mystical search. By not knowing, one comes to know, and by knowing, one misses. It's a very strange moment in a way, so it is called by Dionysius with his beauty, you know. He calls it the translucent darkness. The darkness which is pure light. He also calls it the docta ignorantia, the doctrine of ignorance, or knowing ignorance. So his followers speak of people who belong to the world of ignorant knowledge. They know much. They know nothing. And the others, the people who belong to the world of knowing ignorance, they know nothing and they know it all. Thou Trinity beyond being, direct us to the height of mystical revelation, sublime beyond all thought and light, wherein the simple, absolute, and immutable mysteries of divine truth are hidden in the translucent darkness of that silence which revealeth in secret. For this darkness, though of deepest obscurity, is yet radiantly clear, and though beyond touch and sight, it overfills our unseeing minds with splendors of transcendent beauty. Yeah. See, for our Western culture, even at that state, you know, in the first century, something quite different came with this man. Speaking of God, beyond knowledge we have had, but beyond being, you can't say God is, you can't say I know in our usual sense of knowledge. And the sharpness of his intelligence, you know, his clarity of seeing. Thou Trinity beyond being, direct us to the height of mystical revelation. In the East, they have long had the prayer, you know, lead me from the unreal to the real. Lead me from darkness to light. Lead me from death to immortality. We are in darkness, O Lord. Lead us so that we may know the world of light. Guide us, direct us, lead us from the world of untruth to the world of truth. We are surrounded by death, O Lord. Lead us from death to deathlessness, from time to timelessness. Direct us to the heights of mystical revelation. This is my prayer. Timothy, exert yourself in meditation. Quit the senses and the intellect and the knowing of what is and is not. For by this you may unknowingly attain. Beautifully put. Just beautifully put. Now, prayer. This is prayer, you know. Many people today think that prayer is significant only if there is someone to listen to the prayer. You're praying to someone. So you're praying to God as a person. You know, the thinking goes, you know, I'm going to pray to God and he'll listen to me and he will write things between me and the world. He will change the world so it will be better for me. Once in a while somebody says, and he will change me so I will fit in better. Yeah. But Dionysius' prayer is more like an attitude. A prayer is significant because you pray. The prayer isn't going to change God. That would be asinine to think that, you know. The prayer changes you, if it is true prayer. In true prayer, you become very humble. You can even find some reverence. But you can surrender this attitude, You know, I don't know where to go. I don't know how to find you. I don't even know how to start. Guide me. You know, this kind of agnosia, I don't know. You know, the acceptance of not knowing, I don't know. You know, it's some people have the idea that, you know, they're going to pray and then God's going to come knocking at the door to fulfill your heart's desire. Well, just to fulfill your desires, what's the point? You spend your whole life trying to do that. But the attitude that you don't know, I don't know, and we can surrender into this not knowing, the very ability to have this attitude, it helps us to understand what we are all about. Helps us in our knowing of existence. You lose a little bit of your egotistical stiffness. You let go. Prayer gives us the opportunity to let go in this attitude. In meditation is a not knowing and letting go. It is the let go and the not knowing that opens the door. There's a little anecdote told about Kabir, the great Indian mystic, and he was passing one day by the side of a mosque, and the priest was shouting the morning prayer. So Kabir went in, and he shook this man, and he said to him, "What are you doing? What are you doing? Do you think your God is deaf? You know, he's up there shouting this prayer. Why are you shouting? You know, just whisper. That'll do. In fact, there's no need even to whisper. The attitude is sufficient. Prayer is an attitude of letting go. Now, Dionysius says in this, "Direct us to the height of a mystical revelation, sublime beyond all thought and light." Now, mystics have always said, you know, God is beyond thought. There's no way that you can think about God. It is impossible. Thinking is missing. And then so, well, God is light. And now comes this Greek and says, beyond light. The divine truth is beyond light. Everybody running around in their head looking for a light. Like somebody's going to turn a switch all of a sudden. Divine, the word has a Sanskrit root. And from the same root, D-I-V, we have the word day. And from the same root is the word deva, which is a messenger of light. Divine, light. So people think of it as synonymous with God, light. Dionysius says this is a projection. We're afraid of the dark. And out of the fear of the dark, we conceive God as light. course, he hasn't written. When you go beyond all thought, when you go beyond all thought, then what is God? You can't even think the word. What is God? Is God darkness? Is God light? Not light, must be darkness. Not darkness, must be light. See, we're back in the same old dichotomy. Yeah. And now, this man says, translucent darkness. God is death and life together. Light and darkness together. Matter and consciousness together. Man and woman together. And not a he, not a she. You know, and so the Upanishads, you know, they've always called it it. Uppercase, it. Taking it away from, it's a thing, it's uppercase. It's not an object. It is eternal. It is such as it is. You don't say what it is. It's just such as it is. Now, and today, women's lib are beginning to insist that God should be called she. Remind he, it's she. To call God he is nothing but male chauvinism. Been going on long enough, we're going to switch. God's going to be she. But isn't calling God she just a female counterpart of chauvinism? You just jumped over to the other pole, huh? God is one. Yeah. One that contains the polarities. You know, the Tai Chi symbol is so great. You know, the circle with the light and the darkness contained in it. The polarities moving. Wherein the simple, absolute, and immutable mysteries of divine truth are hidden in the translucent darkness of the silence which revealeth in secret. So we come to this knowing in silence. And that silence is not a dead, dull, thud silence. You know, like the man that was a little not all there. In the middle of a busy street in a town, he kneeling down with his ear on the tarmac, you know, the asphalt, the paving, his ear down on there, you know. And a passerby, finally, you know, somebody noticed him. And this passerby became very puzzled, was curious, this man kneeling and with his ear to the ground. And he wasn't able to contain his curiosity. So he also knelt down, and he put his ear to the ground. And he doesn't hear anything. And he doesn't hear anything, and he doesn't hear anything. So after a while, he says to this first man, "What are you listening to? I can't hear anything." "Yes," replied the first man, "it's been like this since this morning." Now, some people think that is the deep silence, and it's not. Silence, silence, silence. It's the silence that comes through meditation. It's this agnosia, this living, thundering silence, you know, that is so vibrant and alive and so silent and so still. And this silence, you know, in its aliveness speaks of the hidden mysteries. And it reveals them. It's not an absence of everything. It is so full. It is abundantly full. It's overflowingly full. not with thoughts, no ideas, no, but with this revelation of what is in secret. And Jesus said, you know, when you pray, pray in secret. For this darkness, though of deepest obscurity, and here we have again, you know, like Lao Tzu, very similar to this, to the Taoist thing. Lao Tzu says, on the surface it is not clear, but in the depths it is not obscure. Pseudo pseudo Dionysius, his via negativa, which is what it was. It's not a affirming of this is the way it is, and this is the way it is, and this is the way it is. It's his, not this, not this, not this. His chipping, his cutting, chunk by chunk, you know, so that slowly, like a sculptor, a statue emerges. Slowly, the real you stands clear out of all of your conditioning. The emerging process, that's what we're in, The emerging process. And this is my prayer. As for you, beloved Timothy, exerting yourself sincerely in mystical contemplation, quiet the senses, the workings of the intellect, and all that may be sensed and known, and all that is not and is. For by this, you may unknowingly attain. Okay? You know, actually, I could have just read the little thing from Mystica Theologia and let it go at that. It's rather self-explanatory. After all, you just spent a week trying to quiet the senses and the intellect from all that is and is not. But the words unknowingly attain. I don't think it can be better said. Knowingly you won't attain, but unknowingly, doors wide open. And now may the peace and the power that passeth all understanding hold us and keep us in the love of the Christed consciousness while we are seemingly separate one from another. And I thank you very much for coming.
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.